coming to you from my apartment that doubles as a podcast recording studio. This is What Should I Do With My Life with Steph Horowitz. I'm Steph Horowitz. Thanks for joining me. This podcast is about how none of us know what we're doing. None of us have it figured out. No matter if you seem like you have it all together, you really don't, so be honest. We're going to talk about real stories from real people, their experiences, how they're figuring it out. From career pivots to being in the same industry for 40 years, we're going to hash this thing out so we can all find more meaning and passion in our work and day-to-days. Hello, everyone. Today we have one special guest. Meet Shirley Goodman, aka the Dancing Nana. At 99 years young, Shirley has been tap dancing for over 90 years. She started performing as a tap dancer as a young girl in the vaudeville days, and after high school, Nana opened up her own dance school. Today, you can find Nana performing at various jazz venues in Sarasota and teaching at local retirement homes, synagogues, and churches. You may recognize Nana from her viral video dancing the tush push with her grandchildren at a family wedding. Her video has garnered over 50 million views, and she has truly become an internet sensation. Nana's passion for dancing and movement is contagious, and she truly inspires everyone she meets and everyone who sees her videos to get up and dance. Today's episode is extra special because I'm joined by my sister-in-law Miriam, who happens to be Nana's granddaughter. In this episode, we talk about how Nana's passion for tap dancing began, how it felt for Nana to achieve her lifelong dream of dancing on TV on Good Morning America, which happened in her late 90s, might I add, and we find out what Nana always keeps in her purse. This episode also includes an extra special original audio clip of Nana tap dancing in 1938 on the Major Bowes radio show that you must hear. I can't wait for you to listen and meet the amazing dancing Nana, Miss Shirley Goodman. Nana.
Oh, we hear you.
We hear you.
Just turn on your camera.
Do you know how to turn your... Yeah.
Okay, Nana. So a reminder, today we're really here to talk about your passion, your life, obviously dancing and what it means to you. So we're just going to dive in and ask you some questions. And we're really happy to have you here on the show with us today.
Thank you.
So, Nana, in one sentence, what do? And why do you keep doing it until today?
What do? I eat a lot of chocolate.
Great.
No, I dance. I love dancing and music. That's my life. And that's what keeps me going at this age of 99, is the music, the jazz, and the dancing. And my family, of course, comes first. There's no question about that. But after that comes the music and the jazz and the dancing.
So when did your passion and love for the music and the jazz and the dancing begin for you?
Well, my dad was a vaudevillian, if you know what that means. I mean, that's an old-time saying. But anyway, he was in show business. And locally, of course, mostly. And he taught me how to tap dance when I was 8 years old. And I loved it, of course. And then we didn't have any money to have lessons. So he took me around to the different dance studios in my hometown to see which one he thought was good enough to teach me. And he picked one studio and they gave me lessons for nothing because they saw me dance the way he had taught me. And so I took dance lessons for nothing. And then when I graduated high school, I opened my own dancing school in Troy, New York.
Yeah, you just said a lot there. That was like a few sentences, but I feel like, you know, we could spend 10 hours just talking about them. Obviously we will not, but your dad, when he was performing, he was tap dancing.
He could tap dance. He played the banjo. He put on minstrel shows, if you know what that means, back in the day. It would be politically incorrect now. Of course, you couldn't do it, okay? And they told jokes back and forth to each other. And I would perform in that show. And there were other performers, too, of course. And they told all these jokes like, who was that lady? I saw you with the other day. And the guy says, that was no lady. That was my wife. Brum, bum. That's the kind of jokes they told.
Nana, I feel like you should tell us a little bit about the opening acts you used to do back in the day.
We would tap dance. We would go out and do our, you know, like very innocent things and do our tap dances. And then we'd come back into the dressing room so that we really didn't see anything of what else went on. But then I'll never forget one time when one gal came back in and she didn't have any clothes on at all. And we were only kids. I mean, well, I was about 9 or 10 years old, 11. I didn't know what that was all about, but they were strippers. But see, we were not allowed. They had to have a legitimate thing, like the dancing school first, in order to get away with that. Mm-hmm. So that was my experience with a stripper club.
Have you had any recent experience? I'm just kidding. Did you immediately start loving it? Like, it sounds like, okay, your dad taught you when you were a little girl, and then you were performing, you were so good that the schools wanted you and you didn't have to pay. And then after high school, you opened up your own dance studio, which is crazy. And we'll talk about that in a minute. But did you love it immediately? Or did you learn to love it? You know, dancing is grueling and you need to be disciplined. Like, how was that experience for you?
I loved it right away. I love the dancing, the sound. And, you know, that's what seems to appeal to people with the tap dancing is the sounds, you know. And I still can do it at this age because I don't hop around and jump around a lot. I just stay close to the floor and make a lot of sounds with the taps. And that's what seems to appeal to people. But I loved it right away. And of course, I loved growing up in a musical family. My mother played the piano. My dad sang and played banjo and tap danced. I made music with my feet. My sister sang, had a beautiful voice. My brother played the trumpet. So we were all musical, and it's a wonderful way to grow up. Let me tell you, I recommend it highly.
Definitely. And I love what you said, that it's not physical. It's not with a little bit of physical effort, because clearly you're making a huge effort in tapping mentally and physically. But I guess what I mean is a smaller movement, like you said, closer to the ground, can make a lot of noise and can have a big impact. And I feel like that's also kind of a nice metaphor or figurative of, you can really make a big impact by the small movements. And it's funny because I feel like that's what you've done. You have become the dancing Nana, the viral dancing Nana that people all over the world have watched you dance, and you've impacted them so much.
That's the thing I like to hear most. What people say to me now, of course, is, you're such an inspiration. And that's the thing I love to hear, because it means that they think, well, if she can do it, I can do it. And then they'll go ahead and keep on moving. You got to keep on moving. That's the secret. You can't just sit still. I mean, I sit a lot now, because I don't drive anymore. And so I have no choice. I can only go where people will take me, or I pay drivers to take me places. But mostly I sit a lot, but I still keep moving in my house. If I have to take the least little piece of garbage out, I walk out to the garage with it, you know, just to have a walk, so that my legs will keep on moving. And that's what you have to do. My recommendation is to keep moving.
I think everyone discovered your video. It was before COVID, right? I think it was right before COVID.
Yeah.
But during COVID, your video would keep coming up, you know, and it really was a source of inspiration for people during that tough time as well, seeing you. I want to just take a step back really fast, because I am so curious. You started a dance school when you were 16. Is that what it was? 17? Like,
graduated high. Well, at 17, and then opened the dancing school.
How did you know how to open up a dance school at such a young age? Like, I didn't know how to do anything when I was 17.
My dad was the business part of it. He he took care of all the arrangements and everything. I just did the dancing, the teaching and the dancing. I opened this dancing school. It was a big studio, a great big hall with mirrors, you know, all along the walls, and an office. I didn't know what I was doing. Like Stephanie said, I wouldn't know how to run a business. I sat behind the desk, but I didn't know what I was doing. I only knew to tap dance and how to teach it. I taught tap, toe, ballet, acrobat. I couldn't do acrobatics very well myself, but I knew how to teach it from learning from my teacher.
What I love about what you just said, first of all, it's obviously extremely impressive, but I love that you just said, I didn't know what I was doing. And like, that's kind of the point. There are things you did know. Okay. You were an excellent dancer. Okay. You had the technique. You knew how to teach it. The business aspect, you said, you outsource, let's say, from your dad. Your dad supported there. But I think that's a really good lesson for people too. And on this podcast, on this show, we talk a lot about none of us know what we're doing. We're trying to figure it out in our careers and in our lives. And I love that you can take what you know and what you're good at, and you could always partner with someone else or work with someone else or be creative to kind of bring it to life.
Nana, I have a recollection. I thought you had told me that there was some teaching you did in your own home before you started an official studio. Did you not roll up the rug and teach some of the neighborhood girls?
Well, yeah, we had a candy store, okay, in Troy, New York, on Ferry Street in Troy, New York. And we lived upstairs over the store. And there was just a living room and bedrooms, a couple of bedrooms. And I had a sister and brother, my mother and father. Okay. So they made the living room into a dance studio. And Mary, I'm glad you brought that up, because I kind of was forgetting about that. And so I would teach the neighborhood children upstairs in that room. They put a mirror in and a hardwood floor so that I could use that as a studio, you know. And I did do that. Before I graduated school. You're right.
What was the cost of a dance class?
50 cents.
I love it.
Oh, yeah. 50 cents for class and $1 for private.
So it's interesting, too, to draw from that, like this idea of sometimes we have this idea of the beginning needing to be so official and so large. And sometimes that feels overwhelming, at least for me, in terms of the start of something new or something I want to, you know, try out. What I love from your story too is it began small in your home with the support of your family, but it started with your passion, your love, your experience as a student yourself and becoming a teacher. And you explored that in a small way in your own home, but that was the beginning of your business. And from there, eventually you also turned it into an official dance studio. She also took it on the road.
When I got married, I was 19, almost 20, a month before 20. My husband was 20, almost 21. Okay. I closed the dance studio at that point and traveled following him around while he learned to fly, because he had already enlisted in the Air Corps. And he was, you know, going to be learn to be a pilot and fly in World War II. So I closed the studio so that I could follow him around while he was doing his training. And it was mostly down south. And one of the places we stayed, the women would stay, only see the boys from on Wednesday night and Saturday night, okay? The rest of the time, the women were all together. We called ourselves the Junior Army Wives, JAWS. And we stayed at different people's homes. And I stayed at one home where there was a little six-year-old girl. She was adorable. I taught her how to tap dance. That's what Mary's referring to. It was in Jacksonville, Florida, right near where I live now, not too far. They loved me. I loved them. And everything was great until I got a package from home with salami, lox, bagels. They never heard of that stuff. They didn't know what it was. When I told them I was Jewish, and that was Jewish food, and I wanted to share it with them. The next day, they asked me to move out because I was Jewish. That was my first experience with anti-Semitism, because I grew up in Troy, New York, with Jews, Italians, Blacks, everybody. I didn't know the difference. I didn't care. But that was the first time that I ever heard that, you know, people did not like the Jews, and I had to move.
Well, lucky for her, you taught her in time, and she got to learn how to dance from you, and then kicked you out.
Well, it's interesting to me where that kind of business began in terms of being in your own home and starting things out in terms of people paying you to teach, and then you opening up your own studio, and you lived in this era where, you know, eventually your career took a sidestep, if you will, while you followed your husband who is serving. So thank you for your service as a spouse of an Army member, right?
That's right.
Military member. So, but also that you still found a way to let your passion come with you along your personal journey, and you taught kids where you were.
And it might be interesting to you to know that, of course, my husband did go on to fight, fly a plane in World War II and got shot down over Germany and was a prisoner of war from September 12, 1944 until the war was over in 1945. And then he came back and we raised four kids, three boys and a girl, 10 grandchildren, one of whom was married. And now we have eight great grandchildren.
Wow. It's amazing.
And they all have rhythm. Right.
That's a good segue. So do you feel like you have this amazing legacy and this family, and you're the matriarch of the family, and this love of dance and music you've kind of passed down to everyone? So I'm curious to hear a bit more. How did you kind of share that passion with everyone? What does it look like, maybe in the tush push as well?
It makes me feel wonderful when I see them all having the rhythm. Now, they all, of course, aren't professional dancers, and that's okay. But they all seem to have the rhythm, and going right down to Mary's three kids and this little Atara. If you watch her, she's full of rhythm, and that makes me feel great. And it's nothing I did. It's just in their DNA, I'm very happy to see that. Yes.
Well, whenever it seems like whenever you're all together for family celebrations, there's dancing going on, whether it's you dancing and everyone's singing around you while you perform, maybe it's your birthday or some other celebration, or doing the tush push, which is what got you famous. Yes. Nana, how about, what's the origination of the tush push? Who started it? What first family celebration did it happen at?
Well, that's a universal dance. I didn't originate that dance at all. You can see other people do that all over.
No one can do it like you.
Oh, I don't know about that. Sure, they can. Humble. I didn't even know who Bruno Mars was. And that was the song. I never heard of him.
Well, now he knows who you are.
Yeah. How did this tradition begin? Of doing the tush push at the bar mitzvahs and weddings.
So it started off with some of the bar and bat mitzvahs, and it might not have been the tush push. It might have been some other line dance. Nana would go up, and often it was Nana with the granddaughters, but everyone started catching on, and it's contagious. Her energy is contagious. And Nana would get everyone up, and the guests, whoever else, family members, friends who were at that family celebration would get up.
We did mostly was a tap dance. They call a soft shoe tap dance. The granddaughters and Joni and I would do a little soft shoe dance. And we did that down here too at the jazz club. You know, they have a program down here called Jazz at Two, which I'm going to this afternoon, incidentally, where they have different jazz group bands play. And at one of those times when the girls were all visiting, we did our soft shoe tap dance. The tush push, that's the first time we all did the tush push, was at my nephew's wedding when he sent it in to Good Morning America. Yeah.
First. Well, I remember you did it at Dan and Miriam's wedding. Mm-hmm. And we have some great photos of you all doing it there. But I want to ask about the teaching, because like Miriam said, you started teaching right after high school and you're still teaching today at 99 years young, like you said.
I have to correct that. Uh-oh. I just decided I'm not going to teach anymore now at 100. That's enough of the teaching.
She's retiring at 100. That's very respectable.
Wait, I'm not retiring from dancing. I'm still tap dancing at several different places, which is what I love to do. I'm a ham, you know.
You're a ham. You're a performer. So you're only retiring from teaching at the age of 100. But you will continue performing.
I'll continue performing as long as my legs hold out. Don't forget, I had two open heart surgeries. I have a pacemaker and a stent. Okay.
Here we go.
People just can't believe that.
Yeah.
But my legs are still working. And as long as they work, I'll tap dance.
Nana, will you tell us a little bit about what your teaching has looked like in the last, what, two or three decades down in Florida? You have been teaching, but maybe your participants look a little different than they did back in the day in your studio in Troy, New York.
Well, in Troy, New York, I taught kids how to dance, okay? These kids are like 80 and 90 years old that I teach. Oh boy. And when I say the number 100, I just can't believe it. But anyway, I taught them. They all came, you know, to a classes. I had a couple of different line dance classes where that's where I taught the dances like the Tush Push and Mustang Sally.
The Alley Cat, the mashed potato. Where was the hand jive?
The hand jive. Oh, I love that. Like in
which
Greece.
Is from the movie Grease.
Oh, I love that. Nana, I'm wondering, you said you've taught for many, many years, many different ages. It sounds like at the heart of it, you are a performer. Like if you had to choose either performing or teaching, my gut would say that you would choose performing, right?
Yeah, you're right.
I'm curious to hear when it comes to teaching, your favorite and least favorite parts of teaching.
Oh, the parts of teaching? I don't know if I have a favorite or least favorite. I loved teaching the kids. And of course, tap is my favorite one as compared to ballet. I taught ballet. You can't do that at this age, but I could still tap. And I love the tap and I love teaching the little kids. Yeah, I love little kids. They're just so adorable. And the older people, I like doing the chair dance. I went to assisted living homes and we did chair dancing. And what Miri's talking about is doing that hand jive thing.
Yeah.
They could do all that stuff sitting down. That's what I really enjoyed. Yeah. In fact, I might end up living in one of those places. I don't know.
Who's going to teach? You're going to keep teaching. Oh, well, actually, you're not. Who's going to take over? Because you said you're going to stop teaching at 100. Who's going to fill your shoes?
There are other people who teach dancing. Believe me, dancing will go on without me. But I'm going to go on for another, I don't know, 20 years.
That's right. That's right. I love that. I think I just love how you're still performing. Like you are still working. You're still doing what you love. And
yeah,
a lot of people say, do not mix work with pleasure. Like you shouldn't try and have your career or your life's work be your passion because it could get ugly or it could get muddled. You know, some dancers are so passionate about dancing and then the grueling schedule and discipline, you know, a lot of people have had fallouts with dancing because what that means to make it a career. So I'm curious to hear from you a bit about keeping the passion going and how did you make sure that the fire never died?
You know what? It's the music. It's the music that does it. I can be, if you could see me walk around my house, I tell this to people too. I say, if you could see me, you wouldn't believe it's the same person. It's, you know, I'm grunting and groaning every time I sit down or stand up. But when that music goes on and when I put my tap shoes on, it's like I'm in a different world. Really, seriously. I mean, I don't know how to explain it myself, but it is the jazz music. And that's why I love living here in Sarasota. There is so much jazz. I could go out every night. In fact, I go out a lot of nights to jazz programs. And some of them, I dance, you know, they ask me to do my tap dance, which I do. And some of them I just go to enjoy. Actually, the place I'm going this afternoon that I told you about, Jazz at Two, you know, where they have a different group. I used to tap dance there. Every time I went, they would ask me to do my dance. Everybody got to know me. They all know me. They hug me and kiss me. Last week when I went, they said, "Sorry, Shirley, the church where they have it will not allow me to dance anymore because of liability." Well, they're afraid I'll fall.
And
so I can't dance there anymore. And that's very disappointing. You know,
become your own tradition in your community there. People expect and hope to see you dance.
Yes.
As
soon as I walk in, everybody says, "Are you going to dance? Are you going to dance?" I say, "Yeah, if they ask me."
I love that you have this passion for the music and the jazz, and the tap dancing like weaves really well in with the beat. You could literally be part of the jazz band essentially with your feet, with the tapping as an instrument. And with tapping, of course, there's also the a cappella. And, you know, we've seen you tap a cappella without music. And it sounds like you much prefer tapping with music. What's the biggest difference for you when you tap along to music you love, or if you got a silent room and just your tap shoes and that's the music?
Well, the interesting thing, you know, you talk about it, even though I love dancing to the music, I like them to play what we call stop time, which means that they play and stop each measure so you can hear the sounds. In other words, if they there's one song that's played mostly for drummers, and it goes da 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 da, and they stop and you hear the drum go. Well, I like to use that song for my tap dance because mm-hmm. they'll play da 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 da, and then you can hear all the taps.
Throughout the conversation, we've talked about inspiration and how much of an inspiration you are. And I think another big thing for people to realize and know is that you always kind of had this dream of dancing on TV. And this is a dream that you accomplished in your late 90s. And that's a big deal. That's like a really big deal. That's a whole other kind of source of inspiration for people about not giving up on their dreams. It's never too late.
Yes.
You can still do it. You know, any words of wisdom you have for other big dreamers? And then also about your experience achieving that dream. What was it like dancing on TV?
To answer your question, the only thing I can tell everybody, like I said before, is to keep on moving all the time. And I mean, I love dancing down here in Sarasota because of all the jazz music and everything. It's wonderful. That's what keeps me going. But you just gotta tell yourself you're not going to just sit in a rocking chair when you get to be 100. You're going to keep on moving.
Yeah.
That you're reminding me, Stephanie, of how I danced on the radio in 1938.
Mm-hmm.
And my grandchildren all left when I told them I was on Major Bowes, which was a radio show, because we didn't have TV in 1938, okay? So we had Major Bowes Amateur Hour, which would compare to your American Idol today on TV. And I tap danced on the radio. And actually, I have a CD of it. One of my friends gave me a CD of that recorded program where this other gal from Troy, New York, and I danced together. We took turns, okay? And I ended up winning a gold watch on that program.
Now we have representing Troy two lovely girls, both dancers, one Shirley Cohen and the other Jean Roots, R-U-H-T-Z, Roots. Now, I don't know whether they're even acquainted, possibly not. Today, an old established jewelry concern in Troy telegraphed a desire to present a gold watch to the biggest vote getter on tonight's program. The voting should be fast and furious, and it strikes me as a good plan to have these two girls do a challenge dance. They dance to the same tunes, though their style may be quite different. Now, according to their application, Shirley Cohen assists her father in his candy shop in Troy. I suspect that part of her job is stock-taking. And Jean Rutz is a piano graduate of the Troy Conservatory of Music. Both charming. Now, let's see what happens. Shirley, by the way, is 15 and Jean 16. First, Shirley and Jean dance together, and then each one in turn. All right.
And how was the experience for you on Good Morning America? What was it like to be there with everyone and get that kind of reaction?
It was very exciting and very exciting to meet. I was always a fan of celebrities. I mean, I always got, when I freaked out when I would see a celebrity, I'd go crazy, you know. Now, it was so strange to me is people are acting that way when they see me.
Yeah.
And I can't believe it. I don't understand it at all. But when I first saw Robin Roberts, the first thing I said was, oh, you're so tall.
Yeah.
What a jerk. And I walked up to her and I'm looking up like this. And it was very exciting to see the celebrities. And then when we were out in the hall, Mary, I don't know if you were right there at the point when George Stephanopoulos was walking by. And I said, oh, I know that guy. I got so excited.
What I think too is a really interesting and awesome takeaway from the Shirley Goodman, the dancing Nana, is that she's never afraid or embarrassed to put her love of dance out there, to put her whole self out there. So it's not the first time that she has danced with or for a celebrity. The listeners out there, I don't know what your grandmothers keep in their purse, but my grandmother keeps her tap shoes in her purse. She is ready to go at any time. What was the name of the male entertainer, actor, dancer who you met after his show? You stuck around, you had your tap shoes with you, and you got to dance with him after his show.
Tony Danza. I went to see his show, yeah. And they weren't going to let me go in. And, or do anything, but I wrote a note to him, you know, because I had met him on the street one day and we talked. He was adorable. And so he sent a note out to them and said, let her come in. So I went in. I didn't have my shoes on, but I had them with me, of course. And I'm sitting there and I told him how, you know, I like to tap dance and I love his dancing. And he said, well, what kind of tap dance do you do? I said, and I showed him a little bit without my shoes on. And after he saw me do a little step, he said, put your shoes on. And I did. And then I tap danced with him. And we've got a video of that. Mir, I don't know if you have it, Mir.
Seen that video. It's amazing. I feel like you take every opportunity. It's like always putting yourself out there. Like someone is watching. Someone interesting could be watching. Like
it's called showing off.
It's called showing off. Well, good. Guess what? Not everyone can do that. And it takes a little bit of chutzpah too. So that's definitely a good ingredient for making it happen. Own it. We all have a little bit of chutzpah. I think the last question I would want to ask, which I usually end my shows on, is Nana, what advice would you give to someone who's not sure what to do with their lives? Maybe they don't know what their passion is.
Well, I'm not sure. See, with me, it came naturally. I mean, to just want to do this. But I would say that whatever you feel in your heart that you want to do, go for it. Just do it. And don't give up on anything. This was great, girls.
Yeah, this was amazing. Thank you so, so much for sharing. How can people stay in touch with you and watch you, Dan?
Plug your, you know, Instagram, you know, we can follow you because
I don't even know how to watch Instagram. I don't.
Don't worry. In the end of the interview, I'm going to tell everyone about your Instagram page and I'm going to leave a link where people can follow you and watch you dance.
Oh, okay. Because I know I saw on our family chat that I got 865,000 views on Instagram.
Yeah, your newest video from when Kayla visited is now getting a lot of attention. I really do think it speaks to how much people are in awe of not only your skill, but your longevity with your passion. And it's just really, it's inspiring.
Okay, Mary, you know what I always say? I get claps for being old.
You do.
I love it.
I don't know if they would be that interested if I was 20. Okay, yes. Girls.
Thank you, Nana, so much. This was awesome. We're so happy to talk to you.
Thank you.
Hi, everyone. There are really no words. It was such an honor to be able to learn more about Nana's story, her passion, her endurance, her zest for music and dance, her energy. Is just contagious and inspirational. One of my favorite takeaways from the episode is how Nana carries her tap shoes in her purse. She's always ready to put herself out there and grab any opportunity she has to dance for someone. Who knows what could happen or what it could lead to or who's watching? This is a great attitude that we should all embody. If you want to see Nana dance, follow her on Instagram at @thedancingnana. It's definitely worth it. Thanks so much, everyone. That's it for now.